Contra Radio Network presents The Growing Homestead with your host, Rob Alberucci.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Growing Homestead. I am your host, Rob Alberucci. Tonight's show is going to be a little bit different from what I've always done. Tonight I want to talk about a three-day test I did on my get-home bag, a bag I keep in my truck. With prepping, that's kind of always been my... I've been involved in this prepper life stuff since about 2009. It's a toss-up to what came first, whether the homestead or the prepping kind of all happened at the same time. I homestead because I'm a prepper. I do love the animals. I've always loved it, but the homesteading is because of the prepping. I believe that every adult should be able to take care of themselves in almost any situation. Any parent should be able to take care of themselves and their family in almost any situation. Prepping does not have to be a World War III or a Civil War or the volcano eruption. It could be something as a hurricane, a tornado, a job loss, your wife or spouse being sick and you have a loss of income or a reduction in income. House fire, any of it. It could all be reasons why you need extra food, extra tools, extra clothing, extra medicine, who knows what. So there's many, many, many reasons why it's good to have backup, a food pantry, renewable food sources, you name it, whatever. But anyway, to get on topic here, I have always kept a bag in my truck. Many people refer to them as a get-home bag, a GHB. You hear the term BOB, a bob, a bug-out bag. Typically, your bug-out bags are for like a long-term. If you got to leave your house, what you can carry if you're not planning on coming back to your house. Say you live in a wooded area, there's a forest fire coming. You need to jump up. You need to roll out. You're going to take that bag. You're going to head out, and you don't. And the odds of you coming back to your home are slim. Or maybe a tornado has been spotted in your area, and you're getting out of town. Something, whatever. A get-home bag is just like it sounds. I typically work about 60 miles from home. For some reason, if I should have to walk home, I want some material. A 60 mile walk, you're looking at about 3 to 4 days of walking time to get back home. So I plan my bag with enough stuff for what I think it would take me to get home, to have between 3 and 4 day supplies in my get home bag. And now my get home bag is a backpack. I have probably 4 different backpacks that I have at my house, and I'm constantly emptying them, repacking them, changing this backpack to that backpack, depending on what time of the year it is, spring, summer, what have you. Sometimes I just get in the mood and I change my mind and I'll unpack my bag and repack it into something else. But for this weekend, I am a member of a prepper group. We are known as the Southern Ohio Outdoorsmen. We have about 25 members. We are family-oriented. Kids are involved. Wives are involved. Husbands, you name it. We don't exclude anybody. But we routinely put on a weekend events. We try to do something monthly. And this month, our captain decided that we were going to live out of our bug-out bags for 3 days. Well, I wanted to test my get-home bag, which I usually packed out for a three-day event. So I, instead of packing a bug out bag, whatever, with the thoughts of never coming back, I wanted to take what I thought that I would need for 3 days. I wanted to test my get home bag. So the first things first, let's talk about, we're going to start at the top and I'll kind of work my way through. I want to let you know what my experience was, what worked, what didn't work, where I need improvements, and so on and so forth. First of all, the backpack itself. About a year or so ago, me and my wife have found an interest in backpacking. We're hoping to start going on week-long outings. Our goal is to hike the Appalachian Trail in sections. So we kind of got into this kind of on a whim. We were hiking in Gatlinburg in the Smoky Mountains. We were in a outfitter shop. We found some packs that we really liked, and we each bought a 38 liter Osprey pack. A lot of people would call that a day pack. Some people, your ultralight backpackers, say that they can make it in several days in a 38 liter pack, whatever. But for this particular weekend, I went ahead and packed my Osprey pack. This is by no means a tactical looking pack. This is what you would see a backpacker use, a smaller version of it. So as I was loading up my pack, generally on these weekends, my wife will go along and we take a two-person tent. We have our sleeping pads, sleeping bags and all that. This particular trip, it was just me. My wife did not, she stayed home. So when I was packing my bag up, I started off with my two-person tent and my mattress pad and my sleeping bag and all that. And I was quickly running out of room. So I went ahead and I have a hammock. It is one of your Walmart style. I bought it from Walmart. It's a $25 hammock. And it comes with a rain fly. So I figured this would be my perfect opportunity to give my hammock a try. The weather was supposed to be, we had had rain from about Wednesday. It rained Thursday. It rained. And then Friday it was supposed to stop raining in the morning and start drying out. That was the other reason for the hammock, is the ground was so wet and so saturated, I didn't think I'd be wanting to sleep on the ground in my tent. So there again, I picked the hammock with the rain fly. Got out to where we were having our event on Friday afternoon. Set my hammock up. It's set up very easy. I did realize that there definitely is a method to setting the hammocks up, and some of the other members of this group are very experienced with the hammocks, and that after I had set it up the way I thought I should set it up, they came and kind of helped me out a little bit and told me I was needing to adjust this and tighten that. And the first thing I realized was my rain fly was way too small. The rain fly that they sell with this hammock at Walmart barely covered the hammock itself and was way too small. So I was very thankful that one of the other members did have an extra rain fly with them. Some of these guys, they just use a tarp. They'll tie some extra paracord from across the trees. They will hang their tarp over it, stake it down at the corners, and make a little roof out of it. But enough. Thankfully, there was an extra rain fly that I had available, and that is because it did not stop raining on Friday. It rained from the time I got there about 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon. It rained all evening, all night, and didn't quit until Saturday morning. Had I not had that extra rain fly that I was able to borrow, I would have been soaking wet the whole entire night, and it dropped down to right around 30 degrees overnight. So the rain fly was the first problem. The second problem was I froze to death. I'm coming to realize that with these hammocks, which, you know, common sense would tell you that the wind is going to blow underneath you, on above you, and everything else. My sleeping bag, which was supposed to be a 30-degree sleeping bag, I'm realizing what that means is that that 30 degrees, that rating on that sleeping bag means that you will just get by. It's not going to necessarily keep you warm or comfortable, but it is enough to get by, and I was by no means comfortable whatsoever. So looking at some of the other guys, the experienced guys with the hammocks, there is a thing called an underquilt. And it is just a thermal blanket. A lot of them are wool, or some of them are down filled. And this hammock actually bungees to the outside of your hammock underneath and almost hugs it almost basically like a diaper. And then some of the guys will still use a sleeping bag inside their hammock while other guys use a blanket. Getting into a sleeping bag inside of a hammock takes a special skill all in itself. It's a challenge. So Friday night, the first night, I did not have an underquilt. I was just in my sleeping bag trying to get myself positioned into my sleeping bag in my hammock was a chore. So I'm pulling it around, trying to get it all spread up to where I can climb into it. And if you've ever had your coat, once you zip your coat up, if you've ever had the zipper kind of split in the middle, even once the zipper's all the way up the top, and they're a real pain in the butt to get your coat unzipped and then re-zipped, well, that's what happened to me about 1 o'clock in the morning. And at 30 degrees, when your zipper splits open like that, you feel that breeze instantly. And I was very uncomfortable all night long. So Saturday morning, I got up. I cheated for a bit on our thing that we weren't supposed to go anywhere. I did cheat, I admit it. I drove into town, went to a Family Dollar or whatever one of them dollar chain stores was, and I bought myself a fleece blanket. And I, for Saturday, I put the fleece blanket down in my hammock first, laid on top of it, and then used my sleeping bag more or less as a blanket. It did help. I was still cold. Saturday night, the rain had quit. It warmed up to about 60 degrees in the daytime, but still dropped down to 30 at night. And I was not shivering, but I was by no means comfortable. So thinking about that system, should I be walking home from work or whatever, my sleep system, it could use some work for the wintertime. Using the hammock in the summertime, it would be great. I'd love it. It was very comfortable. The $25 hammock from Walmart held up just fine. The ropes that they give you, they're not the best, but they will hold up in a pinch. It'll allow you to set your hammock up, and it will be functional. Second thing on my that I did is I packed way too many clothes. You're out and about. If you're trying to walk home for 3 days, changing your clothes, as many backpackers will tell you, these backpackers that I follow a lot that hike the Appalachian Trail, they will wear the same clothes for a solid week. A lot of them will keep a set of clothes to hike in, a change of clothes to sleep in, and they may keep one extra outfit in their backpacks to when they go into a town. I had planned enough clothes to change my clothes every day, and I found out I just didn't do it. You just got to embrace it. It is, if you're walking home, because if there was, say, an EMP, or say if there was an attack on a shipping port and the gas stations all get shut down, or you have martial law and they no longer allow the vehicles on the road, who knows what? If you're walking home, the last thing you're really, really concerned about is what kind of shape your shirt's in. I did bring extra socks. I would change my socks at night. I've got the heavy wool socks. That definitely is recommended. If you're wearing your boots all day long, the first thing you want to do before you go to bed is change your socks. It dramatically makes you feel warmer. I packed way too heavy on the clothes. I didn't wear half of what I brought. So that's one thing that I'm going to do. I'm going to lighten up on my clothes, on the amount of clothes I have in my get-home bag. Second thing is food. Backpackers claim that they factor 2 pounds of food per day. I packed some ramen noodles. I had some of them single-serving packets of them Spam slices. I had raisins, I had granola bars, I had a pound of rice, I had these them packets of like, they were potatoes, instant potatoes with like chives and sour cream all mixed in it. You just add water, heat it up, and you're good. Those are gross, or at least as your main meal, it wasn't good. What I was doing is I had several of them slices of the Spam. The first night I made my ramen noodles, took my slice of Spam, broke it up into the ramens, ate it all together. That was good. I would eat that again and again. I tried that again the following night with the mashed potatoes, put the Spam in it, and I threw half of it away. The rice I didn't even take. I didn't even open my rice. I packed several packets of oatmeal. I did do the oatmeal. That was fine. But there again, I had probably a dozen granola bars. I had boxes of raisins. I had just all kinds of stuff. I would cut way back on the food. I mentioned about making this food. What I had my cook set that I use is I've got a little 4-piece nesting. It's two size pots, a cup and a larger cup. It all nests together. It's for backpacking or camping in a little net bag. And then I have a little pocket stove. It's a pocket like one of the little rocket fuel gas. It runs off the little MSR gas propane things, tanks, and there's a little jet boil style stove that goes on top of it. That worked flawlessly. I'm going to go ahead and I'll post pictures of this stuff on the Growing Homestead Facebook page. So if you're interested in seeing what all this stuff is, I'm going to go ahead and I'll post the pictures on there. But my stove that I used, it had the little fuel canister, and I can fit the fuel canister, the little stove itself, all fits inside my cooking set. There's enough room in there. It's a self-contained unit. I can put it all together. I even have a small little folding spork that goes in there, and it's a self-contained kit. It worked flawlessly. I'm highly recommend it. I believe the cook set was maybe $20. The little rocket stoves, you can buy a 2-pack of them on Amazon, I think, for $20, and the fuel can's like $4. I'd like a Bass Pro. You don't want to buy the fuel cans from Amazon. They're like 10 from Amazon. Buy it local at a camping store. If you've got a Bass Pro or a Dick's or a Cabela's or something like that in your area, that is where you want to get that. Or REI, you want to get that propane tank there. Buy that local. Another thing I had with me was my knife. I had a fixed blade buck 119 model number and a heavy leather sheath. I've owned this knife for probably just a little over a year. This was actually the first time I used it. Loved it. It was a beast. One of our things that we had to do this weekend is we had to build our own shelter. So we were cutting down small little saplings and building lean-tos and all that stuff. That knife was awesome. I could just skin them little saplings, probably about the size of a silver dollar. I could shave them down to a point, bust them off. Loved it. Worked great. One of the things that water. We had to bring our own water. I know the area where we were. There was a stream. I took 2 bottles of water with me, and then I have a Sawyer Mini. And I have used the Sawyer many other times. They work great. They're easy to use. The water tastes good. I haven't had any issues with stomach issues or anything like that. I've used them. My daughter has used them. My wife has used them. The Sawyer Minis, fantastic. So the goal for this weekend was to get used to our dugout bags or get home bags, whatever it was. And then this was a skill building weekend. So one of the skills that we were going to do was fire making. Another one was our IFAX, which is an individual first aid kit. We talked about those. In this group, we are big on ham radios. So we had a ham radio class. And then we did a shelter building class. So going back to the fire starting, we were practicing with a flint and steel, and char cloth was one of the things. And if you've never made char cloth, or you do not know what char cloth is, it is something you highly, highly, highly recommend that you have in your backpack, that you keep in your bug out bag, that you just have around the house. What you do for char cloth, it is 100% cotton. You can take an old pair of jeans. If you have an old t-shirt, that's 100% cotton. Cut that into strips. And what we all do, and it was very popular, is Altoids. The small little mints, they come in them steel cans. Buy a tin of Altoids, take the mints, throw them away because they're terrible. Cut little strips of whether it's jeans or the cotton strips, about the size of the can. I did an old pair of jeans. I cut 10 pieces the size of the can, stacked them up inside the can, and I took the whole can, closed it up, didn't put anything on it, no holes in it, threw the can right into a fire. Let it lay in the bed of coals. Let it sit in there for about 10 minutes or until about the paint is burned off. Take that can back out of them coals, keep it shut, let it cool off, because if you open it while it's hot, your char cloth will actually burst into flames. But if you let it cool off, you open up that tin and you will have little thin, that's pretty delicate, you'll have these little black pieces of fabric in there. That is called char cloth. So what you do is you take your flint and steel or a ferro rod or one of the magnesium fire starters, you cast a spark onto that tiny little piece of char cloth, and you will see that char cloth just start to glow. You'll see a tiny little pinhead red ember hit it, and it'll start spreading out. Now, is what we did is we took jute string. It's like a baling twine, what would be on a hay bale, but it's the all natural, and it's made out of jute. You take a piece of that jute string, maybe 4 or 5 inches long, and you can pull the individual strands all apart and fluff it up, make like a little bird's nest. So you can set that piece of char cloth. Once you cast that tiny little ember in it, you hold this bird's nest of the jute string in your hand, put the char cloth in the center of it, and then just start blowing into this char cloth, and you will start smoking, and you just keep rolling around. And that, after about, I don't know, 15 seconds of you blowing in this, it will start a flame. So then is what it did is, if you need to have your dried leaves or your tinder, if you can find a cedar tree, you take that cedar bark, you can shave it down, any dry bark, something like that. Or you could do what I did, because it had been raining for 3 or 4 days and I started my first fire on Friday. I took that char cloth in that bird's nest, and I have cotton balls that I roll in Vaseline. If you take just a regular cotton ball, and is what I do is I take a spoonful of Vaseline, set the cotton ball in it, and take a second spoon and just keep working it back and forth, scooping it from one spoon to the other and back and forth, until that cotton ball gets completely coated with the Vaseline. And I'll usually make half a dozen of them at a time, store them in a Ziploc bag, keep them in my get-home bag. Then you can take that char cloth into that bird's nest that you got started on that flame, then use that to light your cotton ball with, and then that cotton ball will burn about 8 minutes. And it was enough for me to take dry, damp sticks and twigs and that kind of stuff and actually start my fire with it. So it's kind of a multi-step process. You start off small, keep building your fire just a little bit bigger, build a little bit bigger, going from the char cloth to the jute string to the cotton ball into your tinder, and you should get your fire going. So that was one of the things that we practiced this weekend. Let's see, the other thing was our individual first aid kits. We had a guy there that in the group that had just been to a fairly extensive, I'm just gonna call it a first aid class that he went to. It was a little bit more than a typical first aid, but they talked about your Israeli bandages, your chest seals, should you puncture a lung or take a bullet wound and have your lung puncture. We talked about chest seals, your different bandages, your first aid bandages. I keep an EpiPen in my individual kit. I don't have an allergies, but a lot of times I'm with my kids, and I do have a child here that has a peanut allergy, so I keep the EpiPen in there for that. Like I said, I mentioned the Israeli bandages and so on and so forth. The other thing, he had a, it's called a cat tourniquet, which is actually a brand, and I've never put one on. I've never had one on me, and we had one that we got to practice with. With a tourniquet, it's kind of like almost like a nylon belt. And you can put this belt around your arm, around your leg, and strap it down as tight as you can get it by hand. It's got a little Velcro closure on it. But then built into that cat strap, there is a rod. I think it was like a plastic rod. It looked like kind of like a overgrown ballpoint pen that's on it. And you can take that ballpoint pen that's attached to it, that rod, and twist it. And keep tightening it up, and within about three turns, it'll cinch that tourniquet down enough to where it'll close off the blood flow. Say you have a serious wound in your hand, or you actually cut your hand off. Within three turns of that rod on there, it'll stop the blood flow to where you're no longer gonna be bleeding out. So it was really neat to actually get to touch one, put one on. Have one put on me. You could feel it within three turns. You know, you can no longer feel the pulse in your wrist or your hand. You know, we didn't have them on for more than 30 seconds, but it's enough, and you can definitely tell a difference on it. So I just wanted to kind of do a breakdown of what I ran into about the get home bag. I thought it was very interesting. The other thing is we also we practice with our firearms. So coming up with a system to have your backpack on and to be able to carry your firearm, extra ammo. Art's typical loadout is we have our rifles and whichever sidearm we want. And then we keep about 200 rounds of ammunition for each. We do 200 rounds of ammunition for our rifle and 200 rounds of ammunition for our sidearm. So carrying that much weight, plus all your other gear, plus all your other stuff and everything else, it's just a really eye-opening experience. When you put all that weight on and figuring out how to get a backpack to work with, if you have a tactical vest or if you have a tactical belt or even just a holster on your side, getting a system to all work together it's a challenge without getting yourself all bogged down. And then, you know, you're factoring sleeping bags and food and clothing and water and any other tools you want, a fixed blade knife, a pocket knife, your water filter. Some guys carry an axe or a hatchet. So sky's the limit. You need to get out and test your equipment, see what works. Go out in your backyard. You don't necessarily have to have your group. Go out in your backyard and, you know, stay out in your yard for and overnight and just play with your gear and see how it works. So I just wanted to kind of share with you. Hopefully I didn't ramble on too awful much and you can follow me. I will put up some pictures of some of my gear on the Growing Homestead Facebook page. And as always, I encourage you all to check out my page, hit the like button, hit the follow button. Contra Radio Network, who is making all this possible for me. Go to Contra Radio Network. You can find us on Facebook. There's a ContraRadioNetwork.com. There's a website. And we have John Jeffers and Mark Boyle are also on KYAH 540 AM radio. They have a website. You can listen live. They are out of Utah. You can catch their shows. They put out a weekly show. Still have the podcast, but we're all over the place. So find our pages, like our pages. Leave us some comments, give us some feedback, tell us what you think, and we look forward to hearing all from you later. Have a good one, guys.